All right, we are in lesson 11 of our study guide, and today we're going to begin talking about foreign missions. Now, everything that we've been focusing on in our study up to now has been primarily looking at the growth of the church in the first century, starting in the book of Acts, the beginning of the church, and going all the way through the end, and looking at, as we've been over the last several weeks, talking about Paul and looking at his work. And most recently, we were discussing the struggles that Paul had in his mission work, especially towards the end, and really focusing on the idea of Paul feeling the presence of God while he's going through all of the things, the hardships and issues and problems that he was facing. So today, as we're coming really to the close of this study, we have this lesson on foreign missions, and then we finish this one. The last one is really focusing a lot more on local kind of mission work and so forth. Just be thinking in terms of missionaries going out around the world and doing the work and sharing the gospel and so forth, and all the kinds of different ways that there are to do that. The introduction on this, the beginning of it, really focuses on looking at, as it says here in this statement, the church in the first century assimilated into their lives the compassion vision of Jesus for the lost. They indeed went into all the world at that time with the gospel. Through their efforts, we read of phenomenal growth. About 3,000 were added on the day of the Pentecost. The Lord added to the church daily. The number of men was about 5,000. Believers were added multitudes, both men and women. And so we saw all these different, as the church was growing, as the gospel was spreading, one of the catalysts to the foreign mission work of them, does anybody recall really what that was? What great event took place that really caused the mission to start spreading out all over the place? The persecution primarily started with Stephen, the stoning of Stephen, and then this great persecution that broke out. And remember, we talked about that, and that was an attempt by Satan to stop the spread of the gospel and the growth of the church, but instead it did just the opposite, because what it did, it says, those who were scattered preached the word everywhere they went. And so that was really the beginning of the foreign mission and missionaries, if you will, in the work going from the home base to all over the world, literally the known world at the time the gospel was preached. So keep that in mind as we talk about some things in terms of what we can do and what does foreign mission work look like in terms of us, okay? So on the explain it and express it, what can I do in terms of support? And the first question on here is, why is support for missionaries needed? And if I can get somebody to look over in Romans 10 and verse 15 and read that for us. But think about it in terms of why. Why do missionaries need support? Okay, they need encouragement. What else do they need? Somebody read for us, beginning in verse 14, 14 and 15. Romans 10.
No,
you're not in the right place, Holloway.
Not in the right place.
Romans 10 and verse 14 and 15.
How then shall they call on him in whom they have not believed? And how shall they believe in him of whom they have not heard? And how shall they hear without a preacher? And how shall they preach except they be sent? As it is written, how beautiful are the feet of them that preach the gospel.
Okay. All right. So those who are out preaching the gospel have pretty feet, right? Okay. So what is this passage really telling us? It's an acknowledgement of what? What things have to take place in order for the gospel to be shared? Okay, people have to be taught, right? Because they can't call, nobody can call on somebody that they haven't heard of, right? All right, and then in order for them to believe, they've got to hear about that person, right? And so then he asks the question, how can they hear without someone preaching it to them? And then the third one, how can they preach unless they are sent? So this series of questions are looking at the, you know, how does this go about happening? People need to hear the gospel, right? But how are they going to hear it if nobody takes it and teaches it to them? Okay? And so that's really what, and again, we focused over and over again and call it, that's what the mission really is. Our mission, the same as theirs, is to preach the gospel to people. Okay? Now, in this case, what we're talking about here is, again, going to foreign countries, to foreign lands, and preaching the gospel. Okay? So, Denise, you've been on a couple of different foreign missionaries, haven't you?
Three.
Okay, you've been over to Ukraine. Where else have you been? Right, okay, all right. And even living over there in Japan, and where else did y'all live?
We lived in Japan, but we traveled, you know, Philippines, Korea.
Okay.
Thailand.
All right. And so in doing that, you're traveling to different places, of different people, a lot of which haven't heard the gospel. You have opportunity to share the gospel with folks, right? Tell us a little bit about your experience. Let me ask you this. Okay, what was some of the best things that you learned from those missionary experiences?
The best things that I learned were, first of all, it's not a competition.
Okay.
And you don't keep score.
Okay. Okay.
So, in fact, we had a woman come in that had been to a couple of other gospel meetings and years before, you know, the other missionaries, and then she came and
okay. She said
yes, and she was baptized. The other thing is that for some reason, when people have been forbidden to have Bibles,
okay.
And hear the word, they tend to thirst for it more, I think, out of curiosity, because in the Russian/Soviet culture, a big thing was literature and classical music. I mean, very highbrow
right.
kind of things. And the Bible is a classic piece of literature that they were denied for so many years.
Right.
So our Bibles that we gave away would sometimes show up in the markets costing quite a bit of money.
Yeah, okay.
They were very valuable. So what we had to do is we had to tell people, yes, we will give you a Bible if you come every night, or, you know,
right.
after we had so many lessons together, or that sort of thing. So we had people just coming in and getting them and then taking them down to sell them in the market.
Okay.
And we met a woman that reminded me a lot of this situation, because she had worked for the government during the Soviet years, and her job was to squelch religion.
Okay. Well, and that's that, you know, depending on what part of the world you're talking about, there's still a lot of restrictions, so you have this kind of a conflict where you have the people in general, they want to hear the gospel, they want to receive the word, but the governments oftentimes still have a lot of restrictions. So like in Ukraine, when this church supported me to go over there many, many times in the work that we were doing over there, we had to go over there and on our application for entry, we had to put on there just tourist. If we would have put, you know, religious activity, they would have denied us access to the country.
I was fortunate that I was working on my bachelor's degree from, so I was able to say I was a student.
Right.
But, you bring up a good point, which I thought about it right around said that, is you have to get permission to stay in some of the hotel.
Yeah.
And when I say hotel,
yeah.
I mean, these hotels were built for the Soviet elite, the government. You know, the government always has what they want, no matter what. They were built as spas or something. One of them was just basically a homeless encampment now. But we had to get permission to stay there. It was very stark. It looked more like a prison cell than a hotel. And we had to give our passports to be taken down to the port at whatever so that we could be registered in town. And there is nothing scarier than handing your passport over to someone.
Yeah.
And we wore actually like money belts all day, every day, with our passport, our return plane ticket, and some money in it.
Yeah.
Or in your sock or something. You never left it in your room. You never left it anywhere. It was on your person at all times.
All times, yeah.
And then when you went from town to town, the Soviet Union, and I think Ukraine still does now, they're either not part of it, you had to have an internal passport to travel from town to town.
Yeah.
And so when you got to a town, there was there was a bar. And usually what that amounted to was our interpreter would give them a bribe so we could go through. Because they find something wrong with your car. Oh, you're exhausted.
Yeah.
Whatever. A lot of graft there. So I just want everybody to think about that right now in the current climate when they're talking about you having to have papers to show that you have a vaccine or whatever, and you can't come in the city or you can't come in the city. I got to tell you, Russ, it bothers me after having been through that.
Yeah. It's, you know, one of the things that, I just encourage you to think about and realize, and things that I took away from some of the trips that I made, is that I think immediately, and Cindy went with me on one trip, and my daughter went with me on another trip, and I remember my daughter, you know, she came away from there, and that's one of the things, when you go to a foreign country like, you know, those, you come away from there with a great appreciation for the blessings that we have here. There are things that we take for granted here that, you know, folks in a lot of these countries around the world, that to them, it's those are, you know, to have. I did some mission work down in Panama, and the little village that we were doing mission work in, we had a missionary there we were supporting. And just to give you an idea of how remote this place was, it's a little village called Union Santana. And it's right, it's there in Panama. The way we accessed it was when you come out of Panama City, you drive down the Pan American Highway, and I don't remember how far down it was, the Pan American Highway, but you turn off the Pan American Highway, which is the main highway that runs all the way from Mexico all the way down to South America. And you turn off of that onto a logging road to get to the village. And it was 25 miles from the logging, from the Pan American Highway to the village. It took us over 3 hours to go 25 miles because we were literally driving through the rainforest on logging roads. Okay? And so that gives you an idea of how remote these places are. The village had a generator, and the government gave them enough gas to run the generator for 4 hours every day. And that was it. Okay, so, you know, the whole idea of hot showers and, you know, things like that and being able to go, they used freezers to keep cold food in like we would a refrigerator. They used a freezer, okay, because that would keep the food cold long enough between the electricity, you know, the times they had the electricity. And again, those are things that we just kind of take for granted. When you walk into a room, you turn on the light switch and the lights come on, you go, don't even think about it, do you?
Yeah, well, they turn the lights out in the city in Ukraine.
Yeah.
Because they have to preserve
the power. Yeah.
Preserve the power. Yeah. And you got to remember, we were down the river where the river meets the sea from Chernobyl.
Okay.
And kids were out there swimming in it and, you know, didn't think anything about it. We had a Russian exchange student that came and lived with us the last year, the year that we moved here. And they all went to the ATM one day to get some money out that was broken. So the next day he goes to that same ATM and says, why are you stopping here? It's broken. He says, well, it's fixed now. In Russia, that would never happen.
Yeah.
It's
still
broken.
Yeah, for a long time.
Yeah, yeah. I know. It's just yeah. Little things like that. Yeah. Just going shopping and trying to find basic goods.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
It's really that's
one of the things. If you've never been to a foreign country on a mission work, and you have the opportunity, I really encourage you to do that, because it really is eye-opening. It really causes you to stop and to think about, you know, the blessings that you have and the things that other people have to go through just to live. Okay? And so, you know, that to me is one of the huge takeaways from that, is that we really are tremendously blessed. And you've heard me talk about, you know, many times before, you know, where we've got so many blessings here in this country, we take even religion for granted. That people in America, you know, that's one reason why, you know, we have so many different churches all over the place, and people just don't take religion very seriously here. But I'm going to tell you, the brethren over in Ukraine, they take it very seriously. They are hungry for the word, and they look for opportunities to study and all those things, because it's not something that they just take for granted. It hasn't been something they've had for a long, long time. And I know one of the things that when we were going over there, you know, they had a constant fear, and I imagine they still do. It's been several years since I've been over there. They had a constant fear, especially not long after, you know, the Soviet Union collapsed, and, you know, now they're free and supposedly and all this stuff, although, yeah, it's still communist. But they feared constantly that the Russians were going to come and take them back over again and things would be just like they were before. And so to them, and their mindset was, they wanted to get as much as they could while the doors were open, so to speak.
Well, and the other thing that is, our generation all spoke Russian, but they were teaching Ukrainian to the kids in school. So they wanted them to have that unique Ukrainian language once again. So you had old people that couldn't read their own passports because it wasn't in their language.
Yeah.
But, you know, you bring up a good point. Something else that we really take for granted here are our freedoms.
Mm-hmm.
And Dale had to go to Thailand. You know, if you step on a piece of money in Thailand, you can be arrested.
Yeah.
Because the king's picture is on it.
Mm-hmm.
And he's considered deity.
Yeah.
And, you know, the fact that we could come here, it may seem kind of trivial that we get a little puffy because the governor says how many people you have in the
right.
Whatever, but I got to tell you guys, it is a slippery slope, and there are some countries out there that in a heartbeat, they will arrest you for doing some of the things that we do that we just take for granted.
Oh, yeah, a lot of things we don't even think about, but when you go to some of these foreign countries, you have to be aware of some of those things, or you can land up in trouble.
And all of the apartments, did y'all live in apartments when you were there?
No, we stayed in a hotel. Beautiful downtown hotel, Jatomir.
Yeah. Well, we couldn't stay in one of them because it was not open to tourists. You had to work for the steel company there. But yeah. Anyway, the walls were made paper thin on purpose. They were built by the government.
Oh, yeah.
Paper thin on purpose so that if your neighbor heard you say something, they could turn you in.
Mm-hmm.
Or if your neighbor knew you had more than 10 people in their house for Christmas, they could turn you in.
Yeah.
But, I mean, there are stories of, like, a guy who criticized a bicycle. He said he didn't like this bicycle. Well, it was a Soviet-made bicycle. He disappeared.
Yeah.
Absolutely. His family never saw him again because he criticized something that was Soviet-made.
Yeah. So here's the thing that I want you to think about. Number one, think about the the advantages that we have here in America, you know, just in everyday life. And think about, you know, what other people around the world in various countries don't have. So many things that we take for granted. But again, one of the huge differences that I've experienced is the desire to learn about Jesus. Where we take that for granted, like everything else we have in this country, they don't. And so they are hungry to hear the word and to be able to listen and so forth. And so, you know, if you were able to go on a mission trip somewhere, one of the things I'd like for you just to think about is that you will likely be facing people that really, really want to hear the gospel from you. They really do. Whereas, you know, people here, we show up to church on Sunday morning just because it's Sunday morning and we're supposed to be there and all of those kinds of things. You know, to them, they're hoping they'll be able to be there on Sunday morning to worship and so forth. Charlotte? Okay.
So all this stuff that y'all are talking about, my heart aches.
Yeah.
You know, but I feel like we should be living like it's your life.
Yeah.
Like, yes, we should humble we don't because we're spoiled.
Right.
You know, but we should be living like it's the last to get that word to someone. We never know, we got all this technology, but we never know if somebody's going to come in that seat and take all of this.
Take it away, yep. That's right.
We don't know that.
Well, if things keep going the way they're going in this country, we're liable to be there, so before long.
Well, I made a statement like that in my Bible class one time because we grew up during the Cold War. I mean, I was in the duck and cover. I was a little active.
Oh, yeah.
But I went to a Christian school, and we had Bible verses we learned every week. It was like a Sunday school. And I still remember a lot of those. But we were taught there may come a day where you don't have a Bible.
That's right.
May
not have it, right. It'd be illegal to have it.
I don't know that we do that so much now, but there are a lot of those verses that just pop into my head sometimes. I knew it was a kid. And they're always very good ones, you know, so that would help me. But I don't know that we do enough of that anymore.
Yeah. Well, you know, again, I think that for our problem is that we take those things for granted.
We got it in our phone.
You know, and
we don't learn. Yeah. Because we don't learn. Who knows anybody's phone number anymore?
Yeah.
We've got a phone. So we do the same thing with everything else. We
yeah.
Phone.
Exactly.
And Charlotte's right. They don't even have to take the phone. They can just cut the service.
Yep, that's true.
You know, you talk about all these different churches and, you know, how polluted is the gospel when they're under persecution?
No,
are you going to preach a false gospel if you're going to be killed for it? You know, just something.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
That it might be a purer gospel.
Yeah. I think you're right. And I know over in Ukraine, and here's another thing that I was really glad that we were a part of sharing with the work over at Glen Allen in Ukraine, in Zhytomyr, because the whole approach, and which is very different from a lot of missionary work that's being done by churches of Christ here in America, going to foreign countries, and the effort that oftentimes is being done is trying to take the U.S. church and plant it over in that foreign country. And so, in other words, it's got they want it to look like a church here. And one of the things that was just prominent about the work that we were doing in Zhytomyr is that we tried really, really hard not to make it that way.
It's their church.
It's their church, and there were some things that was really noticeable to me. And some of these I've told you about before, you know, that you realize, again, are things that we don't really think a whole lot about. When they study the Bible, they look at, you know, how the Bible says to do things and the examples that the church did, and that's how they do it, you know.
Just simple things like the books are in the same order, too.
Yeah. And not only that, but like communion. And I've shared with you how they do communion over there. They do one cup. And they pass it around. You know, there is literally one cup, and they pass it around the room, and everybody, you know, takes a drink out of that one cup. And so you always try to figure out which side are they going to start on. but you know, it's just things like that, and the way that they do everything, they look specifically at the Bible and say, well, the Bible says this, that's what we're going to do.
And as a part of the Russian Orthodox Church, you have to stand.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
You stand the whole time. So when you pray, you stand.
Yeah.
They would never sit down.
Right.
And say a prayer.
Yeah. Yeah, it's so the experience can be really enlightening if you ever have opportunity to do that. But, you know, just sharing some of these things and thinking about it in terms of, all right, we got missionaries that are going to foreign countries, whether they're going there for a couple of weeks or they're going there for a month or they're going there to live for a while, you know, maybe some of them for years. Let's think about, you know, what is that work involved and what's going on with those kinds of things, and how does that really fit into in terms of the mission that the first century church had in sharing the gospel, how they went about doing it, and what are some of the things that we can learn from that to help missionaries today, whether we're actually going on a mission trip ourselves or whether we're just trying to support some mission work. So if you go back to your study guide here, and you look at, let me see here. The Bible ordains that those who preach the gospel should live off the gospel. Okay? So we've got three passages here, there's two of them given here. There's another one, 1 Corinthians 9:14. Let me get somebody to read that for us, and somebody else to go to Galatians 6:6. Who wants to read this morning? All right, Charlotte. Okay. All right. And then Galatians 6:6. Who's got that? Okay. So one of the things that we need to understand is, and I asked this question as we began earlier in this discussion, in terms of supporting missionaries in their work, do we not have an obligation to financially support those who are going out preaching the gospel in mission work or what have you? Okay, Wes? Okay. Okay. All right. Okay. Okay. And there's actually different situations and circumstances. So, like the work that I did, both in Panama and in Ukraine, you know, I need financial help in order to get there, and then for expenses to live while we're there and doing all the things that we're doing. But then, you know, you have to consider, it's like, okay, I'm going to be there for 2 weeks. Yeah, generally, we went from 9 to 14 days is the length that we were there. And it's like, you know, I'm not going to go there and get a job to support myself while I'm there. I know a little bit of Russian, but not a lot, okay, not enough to be able to get a job and work and so forth. So those kinds of things are not practical. You need financial help in order to do that work. You have situations like Kelly and Colonel did where they actually went over as teachers at one of the universities there teaching the English language, and so they were being paid by the university to be there, okay? But they still needed help financially to get there, all right, and then with some of their other expenses and so forth. So bottom line is, to do mission work, it costs money. And missionaries, generally, they need help to accomplish that, okay? And so we saw in Acts, Paul, as he was doing mission work, there were times when Paul was supporting himself, was there not? How was he doing that? Anybody recall? He was a tent maker. That, by trade, that's what he was. And so he was able to do that at least some of the time to be able to help support himself. But then there's a whole lot of other times where he was receiving help from others, you know, in terms of being able to continue the work that he was doing.
Well, we had expenses that he probably would have had anyway, because we were taking Bibles.
Okay.
And had to purchase those, and they had to be Russian language Bibles.
Right.
We had children Bibles, and we had dual language New Testaments because we were teaching English.
Oh, yeah.
So we had that, which made a great cover for me because I had my big box.
Yeah.
So that helped.
Chuck?
This is, we're the body of Christ, and not everybody's a toe. And I mean, there are
exactly.
people
right.
that God blesses to finance a church or finance a missionary. You know, everyone's
yeah.
got a.
Right.
That's just their contribution. You're preaching, right. that's your, you know,
right.
contributing.
And
right.
I got a lot of Sunday school teachers who gave me material because I taught kids.
Right.
Oh
yeah, we did that all, take all kinds of stuff.
Brushes,
yeah. Things that they could not get over there readily.
But
so.
We were not a humanitarian group, so that was another thing where we had to kind of
yeah.
move some pieces around.
Yep. So this applies not only to missionaries, but it applies to local preachers too, doesn't it? I mean, that's you guys pay me a salary. I know that's a shock to some of you. Didn't realize you were doing that. You know, to be able to do what I do, because if I had to have a part time job, which I have done in the past, by the way, to support myself, working, you know, part time jobs. But the problem there is, and that takes away your availability and effectiveness and so forth. And so, you know, bottom line is the Bible tells us that. That's how we need to be supporting those who are sharing the gospel and doing that. Chuck?
We're supposed to be moving forward.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you've got somebody that wants to move forward. We need to get behind those.
Right.
Are you moving forward, or are you going to support somebody moving forward? You could take the lead, you know, someone on a mission.
Right.
Plan a mission like Colonel and Kelly did. Or you can support somebody.
Support them, right.
That's up to you.
And that allows us then to become involved more in the mission work in terms of being able to give some financial support to those that are actually going and doing those things. So in other words, not everybody can go to a foreign mission field and do that. But, you know, we can support in a lot of different ways. Encourage them to go. We're going to talk about here in terms of prayer and so forth a little bit later on in this study. There's those different ways that we can support the work of missionaries and those who are carrying the gospel to other people. Dale, do you have your hand up a second ago?
Yeah, it just occurred to me also that I don't ever recall in any of Paul's letters
received a lot of it.
Voluntarily provided that support.
Yeah.
He never complained that he wasn't getting enough support, but people just took it upon themselves to say, you know, I think he needs help.
Yeah.
This work, they recognized
what he was doing right.
And they provided help without him asking.
Yeah. Yes. And we kind of get, look over in 3 John rather, verses 5 through 8. Let's take a look at that for a moment and look at this same idea in terms of encouraging people to give support to those that are working. Notice what John writes to Gaius in his work in supporting missionaries. It's 3 John, verses 5 through 8. I'll give everybody a chance to get there. Where John writes, "Dear friend, you are faithful in what you are doing for the brothers, even though they are strangers to you. They have told the church about your love. You will do well to send them on their way in a manner worthy of God. It was for the sake of the name that they went out, receiving no help from the pagans. We ought therefore to show hospitality to such men so that we may work together for the truth." All right, now, a couple of questions here in our study guide about this. First of all, what was testified before the church concerning Gaius? In other words, what were they talking about as these missionaries apparently traveled around in different things? What were they talking to others about as far as Gaius was concerned? Okay, well, he says in verse 6, they have told the church about your love. Okay, so the love that Gaius was sharing with these folks who were traveling through, these strangers, okay, it was such that they felt that love, and apparently, and they shared it with others as they continued on their travels, going about sharing the gospel with others. So I think one of the first things that we have to understand is that the love that Gaius had was very evident to those who received it. All right? And so we need, as we support missionaries, do they need to feel the love that we have for them? Oh, yeah.
That's a big part of being a missionary.
Oh, yes, it is.
And our minister at our church in Japan, the second time we were there, was actually a Japanese man, and he was our minister there, and then the rest of the week he was a missionary.
Okay.
And that was why we supported him. Where our building there, it was horrible the first time we were there. It was ready to be condemned, our church building. And you would not believe the effort that had to be taken out to get donations. And they did, and they were able to build the building. And I'm not saying it's wrong to ask, but I'm just saying it was a shame that they had to go to the lengths that they did to get people here to donate to build a building for our military members.
Yeah.
And a mission. Because, I mean, it had a dual purpose.
Yeah.
But it took a lot to do it. Because we were to the point where that building was not replaced.
Yeah.
Have no place to
meet.
Yeah. But yeah, anybody that's ever been around missionaries knows they spend a lot of their time fundraising.
They do. And they have a lot of love for the people that they're working with.
They do.
Another question on here, what good thing was Gaius encouraged to do? What is John encouraging him to do here? Okay. Yeah, Dale, you mentioned a moment ago, it's that hospitality. Verse 8, we ought therefore to show hospitality to such men so we may work together for the truth. So, you know, again, it's making them feel welcome. That we're hospitable to them and in our encouragement to them, because why? He's saying that we may work together in the truth. We have to recognize that missionary work is not just simply the sole responsibility of the missionary himself or herself. It's the responsibility of the church, and we're all working in it together. You see? And so it's not just their work, but it's our work. At least it needs to be. You see? And if I think that sometimes people in America, in the churches in America, get the idea that, well, yeah, we got a missionary, and so I'll put some money in the collection basket to support the missionary and his work, but then they've kind of been like, you know, that's all it takes, and don't need to really do much of anything else. They don't realize how much they really need to be involved in that work, in terms of that they're involved in that work along with the missionaries. We're working together in this. It's not just the missionary and we send them off and, you know, they're doing their thing and we don't think about them anymore. We don't really care what they're doing or anything else. And so we need to understand the mission work as being that it's our work. Yeah. Yes.
Above and beyond just the basic support for the missionary itself. It might be that, you know, the building there needs repairs, or that the missionary needs some form of transportation to be able to go out and visit.
Right.
That sometimes they're afraid to ask for it because it sounds self-serving. But we need to do more than just send them a check.
Yep. Or maybe go and fill in for them so they can go back to the States.
Right.
Yeah. Sometimes we get cynical. Sometimes we have to go check on this because there's a lot of bad missionaries.
Well, yeah, we're out of time. I was sharing with you in the work that we were doing in Panama, that we had one of those situations where the missionary was actually not really doing what he needed to be doing. And
yeah, we had that.
But here's what I want you to take away from this today, is realize that mission work is something that all of us need to be a part of and be involved in. And right now, though we're not supporting any specific missionary, it's something that we need to be thinking about in terms of what we want to do. And whatever support we give, we need to understand and look at it as that we're involved in that work with them. It's our work, not just theirs, where we feel content to write a check and send them on their way and not have to worry about them anymore. So think about those things, and we'll pick up this discussion in 2 weeks. Dale's going to be teaching Bible class next week, and Brian's going to be preaching next week. All right? So we'll continue this discussion 2 weeks from now. Thank you all very much.